And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way on a Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, so that you can get all of the information that you need. We link to our guests as well, and today is no exception, so we encourage you to check out their website, and we ask you to consider what they have to say. There are times when it does seem, and I will be the first to acknowledge the fact that there are times at first blush, hey, it seems like they're kind of off the rails a little bit. But be honest with you, I have learned over the years, the many years that I have been studying what I'll call my metaphysical classroom that spans the globe, quite honestly, the universe, that nothing's impossible, and that things that we thought were impossible 100 years ago, we've done them. It's like, are you kidding? You know, if you were 100 years back in the past and you thought about going to the moon, or you thought about genetic engineering, or you thought about whatever the new technologies are, like the smartphone, no way. That's impossible. Well, I think the same thing is true when it comes to the more esoteric aspects of our lives. We don't fully understand. We really don't fully understand where our lives are coming from, let alone where they're going to. We have a returning guest to our program today, and I'm very excited to have him back on the program. It's been some time, and he has some new information to share with us. His name is Dr. Richard London, and we are grateful for his time and energy. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things we're going to be talking about, is energy. We're going to be talking about several different things, the discovery of the human life blueprint, as well as what are referred to as energy tools, and we're going to talk about how we all can start winning big. I mean, really big. Dr. Richard London, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, my pleasure. It is always a pleasure talking with you, Richard. You are so open, and you express yourself in such a divine way. You're really a joy. Yes, thanks.
Thank you very much. I find it so fascinating that, again, we go down these different paths, and we wonder what's next around the corner as far as not just events, but even from my perspective, as far as our own evolution as a species. Now, I've challenged our listeners on many occasions to, quite honestly, and I invite you to correct me, to admonish me, what have you, if you wish. But there are times when I have to say that I don't think our species is evolving at all. As a matter of fact, I don't think our species deserves the right to continue on this planet. Look at what we've done to ourselves, the other indigenous species of the planet, the Earth itself. And now we want to go out into the universe and perpetuate this. Where is the higher consciousness? Where is the concern for and the interdependent mentality and attitude of the human race?
Well, it's interesting you say that. Richard, we're actually at the tail end of our existence. So let me explain. Noah lived 950 years, and he could sustain himself on, say, one strawberry gave him enough nutrients to sustain him for an entire day. When we got to Abraham, Abraham lived 175 years, Moses 120 years. So we're at the tail end of really, really, I would call it like dark ages now. And we're going back to the beginning. That's what, you know, all these terms that people use, wellness, ascension, going in the fifth dimension. Mm-hmm. It's really about we're moving into this new cycle. And we are in the dark ages.
Now, is this different from the new age that was talked about, especially and predominantly like in the 80s and early 90s?
Well, this whole new age concept was created to provide mankind with powerful words that could move them forward, like the word abundance, the word wellness, the word wellness air that I created. See, words like money has no value in the English language or in our lives. People who want money will never get money. If you want abundance, you want wealth, there's a good chance you can get it. Same way with the word peace. Here's listeners out there. Imagine hundreds of millions of people and billions of people using the word peace or money in a negative manner. That negative energy is attached to those words. So those words are not functioning in the world that we're living today. This is why people are struggling. And that's why we're in the dark ages. It's the language. Yes. Mm. And it's the energy attached to that language. So if you want to create harmony in the world, yes, easy to do. Wealth, easy to do. Wellness, if you want to be a wellness heir, which is a life path that I created, yes, you could do it. So when you say, as a species, we do not deserve Mother Nature, it's true, we really don't. Now, here, listeners, I'm going to tell you something that most people don't know, and I don't know if Richard knows, is that originally our species, our souls, was placed at the base of the tree of life so it could grow. You've seen a tree of life before, right, Richard? Isn't it beautiful?
Absolutely. Yes, I have.
But 99 9/10 of the souls of the world were never placed at the base of the tree of life. So you could not grow abundantly because life was about this. We were carbon-based DNA human beings, and it was based about we were born a certain time, we die a certain time, we have some good times, we have some bad times, we have some great times. But it was all dated. We lived a dated existence. Yes. And now the cycle we're moving into is a non-dated cycle. Yeah. And you have an opportunity to have your soul placed at the base of the tree of life. And just imagine, just practical. Now, I've been told I know as much about spirituality as anybody that exists on the earth, but I look at everything in a very logical, practical manner because I've been expressing this great wisdom since a very young child of 4 and even before 4. So I look at everything very practical and very logical. And so, as an example, when I look at myself, I'm like the sum total of all the flavors of ice cream that exist on this earth and all the flavors that will ever be. Imagine. Isn't that a wonderful thought, especially if you like ice cream?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
As we dive further into this, and I know that we will bring up a lot of different things, I want to go through some terms that people are familiar with, and I want you to put them in their, from your perspective, in their proper place, as it were. I've already mentioned the New Age, and of course that's been referenced, you know, time immemorial in one sense. There are those who are excited about it, they're thrilled, they can hardly wait kind of thing, and then there are others that are fearful of it, they don't, it's of the devil, and all of those kinds of things, and I love the song by R.E.M. Now the lyrics are escaping me, but it's the end of the world as we know it. Well, when I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s in Phoenix and remembering the summer times with the monsoons and the rains and it was wonderful colored lightning and all of this kind of stuff, that's gone. That world, for me, it's gone. It's over. It's dead. It ended. And then in the 70s and 80s, again, you know, the same kinds of things. We go through these phases and it's gone. Some people say that it's great that 8-tracks are gone, but that's a whole nother thing. But when we start talking about these transitions and transformations, And maybe using a better word for the human race, evolution. Now, you say we're at the tail end of the human race, as it were, if I'm understanding correctly, but not necessarily, because I never heard you use the word extinction. The human race isn't going to become extinct. Am I correct that you're referring more to we're not going to be human anymore, but our species is going to evolve into the next level of who and what we are to be, or maybe who and what we are, but we haven't embraced that yet and created it in our world?
Okay, it's who we've always been.
There you go. Okay.
It's who, I'm writing it down, it's who we have always been.
So there isn't really an evolution here. It's more a discovery of who we've always been.
So there's an expression, coming home. You know the expression, coming
mm-hmm.
home.
Yes.
So it's a coming home. So December 22nd, 2012.
Ah, yes.
Everything changed in the universe at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so our DNA started the process of moving from carbon-based DNA to crystalline DNA, which was the original form of our DNA energy before we had a physical human form. So every human being on Earth, your DNA is changing from carbon-based to crystalline. With some people, it is a more rapid change. With others, it's slower. Yes.
Mm.
And it's all based on who you are inside, how light you are inside, or how dark you are inside. Yes. But the change is taking place. You can't stop it. As I said, with some people, it's a slow change. With others, it's a rapid change. Yeah.
Mm.
So just enjoy the ride, basically.
Yeah. And it's not like you can avoid the ride. I mean, this is where we are. I was talking with someone just the other day, as a matter of fact, and the analogy of a game, you know, that we're all involved in playing a game, not necessarily the game, but a game. But in order to exist in this world, in order to be in this world, we must play a game. You choose what game you want to play, but you have to play. I mean, you know, by virtue of your existence here, you chosen to play.
Right. And so I teach people how to win in the divine game of life.
Okay. What do you mean by winning?
Okay. So, first of all, let's talk about the game just really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Every day when I wake up, I bring the A game to life. You got to wake up and bring your A game to life. Yes. And when you're in your A game, the magic happens. Yes. So winning in the divine game of life is becoming a wellness heir. And a wellness heir is a person who has wealth abundantly, wellness abundantly, harmony abundantly, divine love abundantly. So everything is abundant, but it's in balance as well. Yes.
Mm.
So the majority of people are way out of balance. Yes.
Like
way out of balance.
Like when we hear the phrase or the term, you know, the 99% versus the 1%, and it's the 99% who are moaning and groaning and complaining about not having what the 1% have, and they're now here, we're specifically speaking about wealth, they do not believe that they have it. They know from their perspective that they'll never get it, and that the 1% is out to keep them from getting it. This whole mental game, this attitude of lack and deficiency and so forth. And yet I hear you saying that we don't have to live there. We can change the game from the 99% and the 1% to 100%.
See, language keeps people in the problem in the solution. So this is going to, I'm going to blow your mind now, and listeners, I'm sure it will blow your mind.
Okay.
Whole concept of humility. Oh, my God. We're all taught to express humility. If you really think about it in a logical, practical manner, it's a way to control humans' ability to move forward. Because when you're in humility, guess what, Richard? Nobody hears your voice. Yes. Nobody hears your voice in humility. It's only when you step out of humility, because when you step out of humility, you step into a greater vibration. Does that make sense?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I guess I'm a bit perplexed, because I always thought that it was a good thing to be humble, not to think too grandiose of oneself. Certainly to acknowledge, yes, I'm here to serve, and if I can do that, let me do that, and I'm proud and I feel good when I serve. To me, I don't know, is that false humility?
Yes, it is false humility. Let me explain to you. You know what a governor is?
Yes.
They have governors on buses, mm-hmm. and on cars and things, and they keep them from going at a speed over the designed.
Right. Most vehicles are designed not to go to exceed maybe 120 miles an hour, and that's as fast as they will go. I always thought that was funny on sports cars. It's like, wait a minute, it can only go 120, but it's a sports car. It's supposed to go faster. But anyway, okay, so we have a governor.
Governor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a governor.
Yeah.
And let me explain to you.
Mm-hmm.
The higher vibration you go, then you connect with the forces to bring your life in a more divine fashion. So if people out there believe in angels or archangels, ascended masters, light beings, the beings of the seventh ray, they have different vibrations. The greater the vibration, the greater the connection. Humility doesn't give you that great connection because it has a governor on it and it vibrates at a lower level. So when you think about it logically, just like you said, Richard, you were taught to be humble and things of that nature. Yes. So, Jeff, let's look at humility and being humble. Practically and logical, it doesn't vibrate at a high level. It doesn't. And it can't. Yes. So, but when you express wisdom and you share wisdom, it vibrates at a much greater level and gives you the connection that you need to move forward in your life. Yes. So it gives you extra speed. As an example, in third world countries, a lot of people get in accidents on these small little motorcycles, what do they call them?
Mopeds?
Motorbikes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You don't ride a motor-driven vehicle that doesn't have any power.
True.
Because for safety purposes and logic and practicality, you have to get out of the way of people.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you're going to get out of the way of other drivers, because they're not necessarily watching you, you have to watch them, is the power of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So moving out of humility gives you the power.
So you have an interesting dynamic there. You have the power of the vehicle, which you need to move forward, but then you also have a governor that prevents you, and for the best way of putting it, from exceeding a particular speed limit. Which I always thought, okay, if the speed limit's 55, then why can vehicles go 120? I've never understood that, but that's the case. But in this example, as you are elucidating, letting go of humility, this does not mean becoming self-centered and egotistical and narcissistic, not in any way.
It means moving into a state of wisdom, which has the highest level of vibration.
And that removes the governor.
Okay. Richard, when you were a little boy, did your mommy tell you to be a good little boy?
Oh, yeah. Many times.
It doesn't benefit any boys or girls to be good little boys and good little girls. It benefits them and it serves them to be everything that they could be. I wasn't a good little boy. I didn't listen to my parents. I didn't listen to my teachers. I was told not to. To be authentic and to be everything I could be my entire life. Imagine that. My parents used to tell me all the stories that I'm sure your parents, don't go under ladders.
Oh, yeah, the superstitions.
All the superstitions. It's the same as humility. They're all just blocks. Express yourself. Yeah. Like right now, you're expressing yourself. You feel really good. I feel really good. The listeners out there, they should feel really good as well. Because we get to express ourselves and say anything that we want. Yeah. We're stepping out of humility into wisdom, into authenticity. So one of the ways you can win in the divine game of life, you have to be authentic. Yes.
All right. Let's address that word, authentic, because in the present day, we are experiencing not only the lack of humility, but even the lack of, as I'll, and again, these are my observations, the lack of tact and even, I want to use the word compassion, but that's a little too much, on the part of certain political candidates for public office in this country who they're speaking their minds. But they're, it seems as though they're very insensitive to others. What's your observation? I'm not asking you to say for or against anybody. I'm asking you to talk about that form of expressing yourself without regard for, again, what is seeming lack of regard for other people and situations and so forth. Being tactless, in essence.
The majority of information that comes from the lips of human beings is knowledge or people's opinion of what might be fact. And a good example would be love. People express love all the world and they say, I'm loving. People say, I live at the highest level of love, which is unconditional love. But unconditional love for the majority of people in the world is love based on their conditions. The only love that exists in the world is divine love. So we're moving in the direction of divine love, divine law, divine medicine, divine parenting. And so that's a different language, a different vibration. So when I hear negative things coming from people's mouth, this negative energy is coming from their souls. All human beings in the world have negative energy now in their souls, and they're expressing it in their own language. Unfortunately, the masses of people tend to believe that language. Yes. Because it's a language that they're familiar with. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not familiar with the real powerful words. Abundance. Wealth. You know, people wanted, you know, 100 years ago, people wanted $1,000. Then they wanted $10,000. Then they wanted $100,000. Then they wanted a million. Then they wanted a billion. Now they want a trillion. And now they want just unlimited wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So people receive denomination and units of some kind of monetary value, but in most cases they lose their soul in that process. They don't really have a life path. So authenticity in everything you and I are talking about today gives people a solid life path. Most people don't have great lives because they don't have clarity and they really don't have a life path. They're just faking it. They're just living some kind of life with no rhyme or reason. There's no plan connected with it.
Yeah. They just go from day to day, 5 days a week. They go 9 to 5. They come home, sit on the couch, have their dinner, drink their drink, go to bed, get up the next morning, do it all over again, and so forth and so on. You know, and you raised an interesting point as far as the desire for wealth, monetary wealth. And I heard this great story. I thought it was a great story. And I would love to have multiple digits, you know, before the decimal point in my bank account. I'd love to have 6, 7, 8, you know, not to have to be concerned about, you know, being able to afford this, that, or the other thing. But there was this great story that I heard about two gentlemen who they went out for a nice breakfast one morning. And the first gentleman, he is given the bill and he reaches in his pocket and he pulls out the exact amount plus tip that he chooses to give. And they go on their way and they get together a few days later for lunch. And he gets the bill and he reaches in his pocket and he pulls out exact change plus the tip and he pays and off they go. And a few days later, they get together for dinner and the same thing occurs. And the second gentleman was rather perplexed about all of this. You know, it wasn't worrisome, but it was kind of curious. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't say anything.
Okay. The second gentleman asks the first gentleman, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, I'm greatly appreciative of the fact that, you know, you've been, you know, buying our meals, and that's wonderful, and it's great to have great community with you and fellowship and so forth. But I noticed that every time you pay the bill, you always have the exact amount of money in your pocket. How is that? And the gentleman says, well, a few months ago, I came across this this bottle, and I rubbed it, and out came this genie, and he offered me one wish. He says, now you think about it long and hard before you make your wish. And he thought about it, thought, you know, I could wish for $1 million or a billion or a trillion or what have you, or an unlimited bank account or this or that, or cars, and the list went on. But he says, but I finally made the decision, and here was my wish, that I would always have enough money to pay for the things that I wanted. And so he could actually walk around, in a manner of speaking, with a zero balance, knowing that when he got to the place where he needed to pay for whatever it was he was paying for, he would have what he needed. And now he wasn't a greedy individual. He's just, you know, this was just the way he was going about his life. I noticed that in nature, that's sort of the way that things are, that they don't store up for 10 or 20 or 30 years and then they try to preserve the nuts and the grains and all of the things that they eat. They may gather up for a season, but that's about it. Or for a few days. That's just the way that nature works. But man seems to be of the mindset that we've got to store up, you know, in giant silos, all of these things, and yet, you know, we have starvation around the world in many, many places, and yet it's been said that we have enough food to feed everyone on the planet. The problem isn't the fact, the volume of food, it's distribution. A whole nother story. But I liked the story, and I kind of started thinking about that in terms of my life. And thinking, yeah, it would be nice to have 6, 7, 8 digits of money in my bank account. It would be comforting, I suppose. But I've heard it said, Dr. London, that if you have something like that in your bank account, now you're worried about losing it or not maintaining it or trying to add to it. So instead of being concerned about having enough, now you've got to protect it. And maintain it and sort of feed it. So now it becomes something even more cumbersome. Your thoughts?
Okay. I've heard the story before, and I always tell everyone, you want to live a life where you have more than enough to be of service to humanity. That's the key. That's the language, because everything is language. You want to have more than enough to be of service to humanity. The key words is more than enough, and to be service to the humanity. See, I'm my own genie.
Mm-hmm.
I've given away 8 figures, 9 figures, 12 figures to charities in my life. Imagine. Yes. Because I learned how to be my own genie many, many years ago. Everybody's looking for the magic, the one solution. But what happens is they're learning all these solutions, but they're not implementing the solutions.
Mm.
When you tell the universe, see, all the angels, all the archangels, all the ascended masters, all the light beings, all the business people in the world, you know, a penny is equal to $1 billion in that world. Yes, rich people who are really rich do not think that they're rich. They're like little kids who are playing Legos. They're constantly building. They're looking for their next Lego game. My 10-year-old grandson, Paris, he builds these really intricate Legos in just a matter of hours sometimes, and then he's off to the new Lego. So rich people, they're building block people. They're always creating wealth because they don't believe that they're rich. And they didn't make the agreement, as this person in your story did, that he was only going to have just enough. Even the word just enough, it doesn't vibrate at a high level.
Mm.
So mankind is looking for the genie.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little boy, I was the genie. Now I'm grown up chronologically, but I'm still the genie.
And that hasn't changed.
No, it hasn't changed, but the little kid is inside.
Yeah.
See, it's another lie that parents and teachers told the kids. Grow up! There are no happy adults. There are people who are chronologically mature, but have the beauty of the child inside. I see everything through the eyes of a 4-year-old. And I never think about anything except for if I'm hungry for candy, cookies, ice cream.
Mm.
It keeps the soul young, but it also keeps the soul connected. So the majority of people are trying to be all grown up. And when you're all grown up, you have all this responsibility, and then guess what? The majority of people in the world have no coping skills, so they can't handle the responsibility. But guess who created the monster? You create your own monster.
Mm.
Yourself, your children, the people around you, your animals, you name it. People create their own monsters. So if you want to create this beautiful genie, and that genie's you, and just creating everything that you desire. Yes.
Wow. We're going to continue talking with Dr. Richard London here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And when we get back, Dr. London, I want to go into a conversation regarding the Angel Light Energy Tools, and we will do that in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for staying with us as we continue talking with our guest as well as our friend. I do consider him such, Dr. Richard London. It's been a little over 2 years since he's been on the program, and it's great to have him back here, and we're going to talk more with him in just a moment. Just want to remind you that if you'd like to get in touch with Dr. London, you can do that through his website, which, of course, is drrichardlondon.com. That's D-R-R-I-C-H-A-R-D. That's an easy one for me to spell. L-O-N-D-O-N, drrichardlondon.com. And we, again, thank you so much for staying with us here on the program. Let's talk a little bit about these energy tools, the Angel's Light energy tools.
So 30 years ago, when I was really entrenched in high profile and, you know, I had thousands of people around me, I realized as perfect as the world looked behind the scenes, it wasn't that perfect. So we live in a world where people are jealous, they're envious, they hate you, they dislike you, they want to be like you, they want your money, they want your talents, they want your beauty, or whatever it might be. So what I did was, I said, I needed to protect myself. So I created these very, very interesting, powerful energy tools. It started with one. The first one was a pyramid, because pyramids are very, very powerful, and they're connected with a high level of energy. And then as the years went by, I created other energy tools. And then once I had six tools, I connected all the tools together, because I felt the power of six versus the power of one would increase it sixfold. And now I've created, there are about 14 tools now, and they're all connected and extremely powerful. And what happened was, just a few weeks back, my wife was saying to me, she says, you know, you've used these energy tools to protect you from negative energy from people over the last 30 years or so. Why don't you allow people in the world to be able to utilize the same tools? And I always go into myself, into my divine self, and then I connect to divinity and ask, does that sound like a good plan? Divinity said, yes. Yes. We will allow you to offer these energy tools to humanity. But what corresponded at the same time, I did a 12-year study of the Book of Life or the Akashic Records. And when I was in there, finding out about the blueprint of people's lives, I discovered NEFs. Now, this is a scientific discovery by me, that humans have negative energy followers now. Now, an extreme example of a negative energy follower was a person who went into a club in Florida several weeks back and murdered a lot of people. His soul was 40 times as heavy as a normal soul that exists here on Earth. So his negative energy and his negative energy followers moved this person to doing something extreme. Now, not so extreme, but extremely hurtful, was people preventing people from being rich, from being successful, from finding relationships, from finding the right job. Many people are not finding the right job. It's because people in their past and even in the present are sabotaging their lives. Most of the times it's conscious, sometimes it's subconscious. And so what I found out when I was in the Book of Life is that this negative energy that is in everybody's soul can now be projected. So they're projecting this negative energy to things and people because they want, and they want what other people have because they think it's going to make them feel better or be better, or if they have a fancy car, it's going to make them feel more loved or whatever it might be. So a person, an average person walking around in the world can have as little as 20 NEFs to literally thousands of NEFs. So imagine having 1,000 people in your office who are sending you negative energy. And I'm sure there are situations in the world where there is 1,000. And what was even more interesting, Richard, and I don't know if I talked about it when we spoke 2 years ago, what 93% of all the biggest projects in the world are not successful from the biggest companies like IBM, KPMG, and so forth. And it's because people are blocking the success of the project. So if you had 500 people on the project, you have person 10 blocking, person 105 blocking, the person 200, and so forth. Those are negative energy followers. But it didn't connect when I was speaking about people blocking. Yes. But now it is a scientific discovery. It is fact that humans have negative energy followers. So you can't zap them with your power. You can't close your eyes and make them disappear and things of that nature. You can't do any of the magical stuff because it's negative imprinted memory that's in your soul, and it's very powerful. Just as powerful as positive energy is, negative energy can be extremely powerful, but only in a negative fashion. So the energy tools, it was just like God said. The energy tools, they block and stop the energy from, if you had an energy tool in your car, it would block that energy in your car, negative energy. If you had it in your child's dorm, it would block that negative energy. If you have it in your bedroom, your office, your studio, wherever you put one of the energy pieces, it stops and blocks all negative energy forever from other people. Yes. And it's this negative energy from other people. It could be somebody's family. It could be your best friend. Yes. I've learned from, you know, doing consulting so many years that, like in relationships, when you're looking for who's cheating on your husband or wife, you always look to the people closest to you. Yeah.
Mm.
And you think that they're your friends, and they appear on the surface to be your friends, but they're not authentic. So it goes back to the lack of authenticity. So this lack of authenticity, it spurs this negative energy. So this is real. So let's give your listeners a perfect example that I'm sure they're all aware of it. 52% of the population, voting population of England, or over 9 million people voted to remove themselves from the European Union. England is now in a state of shock. The pound is at its worst level in 31 years. So the negative imprinted energy in these people caused them collectively to make a decision that is not favorable to the country and the future of the country, no matter what anybody thinks. We live in a world where collective action and unity really moves people forward. As an example, I'm starting a movement. It's called Teens for Unity. I ran across a young lady who's 16 years old. She's not interested in sex. She's not interested in drugs. She's not interested in dating. She's not interested in going to parties and partying with other teenagers. She's interested in doing things that are going to benefit humanity. So it's this unity that keeps people. It's role models. It's great tribes. So you, me, we're great model, great role models because we express the truth to people, and people need to know the truth. The truth is that every listener is a lot more capable of being bigger than they ever imagined. Yes. But unfortunately, most are fed information that holds them back. Like very few people in the world know, and only the people that I've discussed this with, that they know that there are negative energy followers now that are having a profound effect on people's lives. People think, you know, I'm having bad luck. Yeah. God doesn't love me. Or my wife doesn't love me. Our society doesn't love me, or whatever it might be. No. No. You just have people who are wishing you bad. And that's terrible. Yes, it is terrible. Yeah. But we can't deal with how terrible it is because that's the problem. And that's the way it is with life. As you were talking about this food business, there are solutions that are in effect now where we could feed all of humanity. But many of the people are not utilizing solutions correctly in the distribution, as you said, right, Richard?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's the same way with these problems that exist in this particular world. So let's take your parents, my parents. They could have neighbors that dislike them. The neighbor could come over and try to punch your father or punch my father. The mothers could call each other's names. It really didn't have much effect on people's lives. It didn't stop people from having a dysfunctional life or a functional life. But it's different now. Because imagine having negative energy in your soul. It's pretty powerful. Because originally negative energy was placed in people's bodies. So people had weak knees, lower back pains, migraines, weak ankles, bad feet, you name it. That's where our negative energy, now it's in our souls. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you remove negative energy, imagine, as you remove negative energy, and negative energy is dark, you get lighter. So what does it mean to get lighter? Lighter means to get clearer, more connected. When you're more connected, you're more in heart-centered intelligence, and that creates whatever it is that you want in your life. Yes. Humans are capable of creating whatever it is they want in their lives. Yes.
Yeah. Have there been people down through history who have achieved this that you're describing through not necessarily other means, but obviously if we read about their experiences in books, they would describe it a little differently, but it's still the same experience as you're describing it?
Okay, Gandhi. Gandhi's a perfect example. Let me explain. Here's what's unique about Gandhi. Is Gandhi mastered language. Every word that came out of our response to Gandhi, even if it caused him to go to jail, he knew exactly what was going to happen, and it was all planned. Because it was another step to bring and move him forward. Literally, he had millions of negative energy followers at that time. But at that time when Gandhi lived, the negative energy was not in people's souls. It was in people's sick minds and in their bodies. There's a big difference. The big difference between having your negative imprinted memory and your mind and in your physical body than having it in your soul. Soul is far more powerful. But Gandhi is a perfect example of someone who understood language. And I studied Gandhi's life from beginning to end. He was a very enlightened person. He really didn't take life that serious. Even being thrown in jail, he lived a life, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you an example that just happened yesterday. My wife and I had this new table designed, like 12 or 15 foot table designed for one of our new businesses. And it's a beautiful table, and when it was on the truck to be delivered, and my wife looked at it, she saw it was larger, higher than she wanted, and she's a smaller person. So she started to tear the table up, and she was unhappy with how it turned out. And I said to her that we can't change the table. It's already been created. So all we have to do is love the table, and then the table's going to love us back. So all of her thoughts about how imperfect the table was not helping the situation, and it's actually worsening the situation.
Hmm.
Yes.
I have to say that I find that very interesting, and I think the description is extremely apt, because I run across a lot of people day to day, and I find myself doing the same thing from time to time in terms of the obstacles in my life. But one of the things that has helped me, and for example, in being service to others, being in service to others, that what I found is when somebody comes to me and asks me for something, I have taken the attitude or the perspective, if you will, the position that I never want to just come straight out and say no. Most of the time, if I can't say yes, I will say, let me look into it. Let me see what I can do, and I will get back to you. And I do. And I've always believed, no matter what the circumstance or situation, issue, challenge, whatever name you want to give it, there's always, always, always a workaround, as I call it. There's always a way to accomplish what we want. And this kind of goes to what you've been talking about. If we open ourselves up to, quite honestly, the infinite possibilities.
It's really not about opening ourselves up. You know, miracle making is a process.
Mm-hmm.
The steps in miracle making are trust, faith, hope. Hope has 8 levels. You know, I love bougainvilleas. They grow wild. They're beautiful.
Yeah. You almost can't get rid of them sometimes. Not that you'd necessarily want to, but we planted one 10 years ago we planted one. And it keeps coming back, and we haven't been trying to get rid of it. It's just the weather here has been so sporadic that it just, you know, it dies, comes back, or it goes dormant and comes back. So they're quite hardy.
Yes. So bougainvilleas, imagine a bougainvillea tree with 8 levels. When you get to the 8th level, just on the other side of hope, 8th level is miracle making. So Dr. Richard Ludden and other people in the world, we stay right there. All I have to do is reach over and create miracles. Imagine. But it starts with the hardest for most people is really trust. See, I have what's called empirical faith.
What do you mean by that?
The highest level faith that exists and that has always existed. So every second, every minute, every hour, every day, every month, every year, every century, it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and it never falters. And the way that I've been able to develop such great faith is I started with trust, then moved into faith, then moved into hope. The greatest gift you can give people is hope. Yeah. But hope moves you into miracle making. You can never get into creating miracles in your life unless you're in the hope stage. So it's, you know, God helps them that help those that help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
All these things that we've heard in our life, when we really look at it, they really have a strong meaning. Yes. Unfortunately, we live in this world where, see, there's only 2 types of energy in the world. There's yes, I know, which is divine energy. So the words yes, I know, listeners, is divine energy. Then there's the word no. So these negative energy followers and this negative imprinted memory, this is all no energy. So it's not good to say no unless it's absolutely necessary, because it is negative energy. We live in the greatest time that anyone could be living on this earth, because if you want to be wealthy, it doesn't take a lifetime, because 1 year is a lifetime now. So if somebody says to me, well, I've let a year pass out of my life. Oh my God, a year is a lifetime now.
Mm-hmm.
10 is 10 lifetimes.
Yeah. I remember, after my divorce, there were those who said, you look so different. It's like you're living, and I started thinking about that and thinking that I was getting a new lifetime. In other words, a second, I didn't even have to reincarnate. I got life number two, so to speak.
Richard, I want to tell your listeners, this is really an important fact.
Yes.
For all the women out there, as you get more spiritual, you get younger. Every person who I've never met in my entire life who is moving daily into this spiritual authenticity, they get younger. The aging process stops.
Mm.
And even if you suddenly wake up and you're 60 years old and you look in the mirror and you're old and crinkly and whatever, and if you moved into spirituality, as the days would go by, you would get younger. I don't have one wrinkle, and I spent a lot of time in the sun. Lots.
Yeah.
I do have some marks, sun marks, but I don't have any wrinkles because I'm so happy and so exuberant about life and taking my A game to life. But, I was fortunate. I protected myself 30 years ago. And, now with these angels-like energy tools, humans can purchase them at a really, I call a very reasonable price. And I don't tell that many people. It cost me $3,000 to $5,000 out of my pocket to program all the energies in these tools. Imagine, for every collection, there's 9 pieces in the collection. And we sell the collection. And so the price the people pay doesn't even reflect the value or the amount of time, money, and energies put into it. But it's a necessary process that I must do. I must put the time, money, and energies in to putting these energies from all the angels, archangels, ascended masters, light beings of the seventh ray in these various energy tools, and then offering the tools to humanity, because not doing so would be like not distributing food to the people who needed food. Yes.
It sounds to me like there's also sort of a... I'm just going to use this and you certainly elaborate on it if you would, or correct me. But it just seems as though there is a sort of a, not a debt, a karmic debt, but a sort of a karmic responsibility, a universal responsibility when you discover things of this nature.
Yes, there is a universal responsibility to make sure that people have the opportunity to utilize tools, foods, whatever it might be, that will transform their lives and bring joy.
Yeah.
Not having negative energy come into my homes, my families, my lives has been a real blessing. And it's sad to think that people that I knew, family members, friends, were projecting this negative energy only out of sick jealousy, sick hate, that, you know, I've never been jealous or envious of anybody in my entire life. Imagine, I don't even know those feelings.
I think that, also, even for that matter, there are those who want to control these kinds of things for their own personal gain, and it just doesn't work that way. I've even thought of that from the standpoint of spiritual gifts and so forth, that if you, quote-unquote, discover these things in your life and in your surroundings, what have you, in your searching, and all of a sudden your ego takes over and says, oh, I could make hay with this. I could go far. I, personally, individually, ego-centered, if you will. And I think that sometimes that happens. I mean, I worked for 15 years for a Christian radio station, and I could see those kinds of things develop. I saw new pastors who were just beginning. They were so idealistic, so full of energy and life and light and so forth. But as time progressed, it was as if their personality, if you will, changed to the point where they thought that they were the next best thing since sliced bread. But it wasn't them.
Yeah, we have a moral responsibility, a spiritual responsibility, a human responsibility to share all wisdom, because wisdom belongs to God. If you're guided to a discovery, you have to share that discovery with others, even if the monetary remuneration doesn't match. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's more important for people to rid themselves and block these negative energies from coming into their family's life. Because if you look at most families, and I'll give you an example, I've had clients who were ready for relationships, mentally, emotionally, physically, financially, and everything, and the relationships didn't come. And when I look back in retrospect, oh my God, their family, their friends, past relationships were blocking them from having the relationship.
Yeah.
My work, they eventually got their relationship.
Yeah.
But it was a big struggle. It took lots of time, money, and energies, and sometimes years. And to me, as I told you, 1 year is a lifetime. So to lose 1 year of, say, divine love is losing a lifetime of divine love.
Yeah.
So, Richard, you and I, we tend to look at things very practical and logical. All this spiritual stuff, which I know I've never found anything I didn't know, but I put it in perspective in a very practical, logical, human manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of funny when I think about this in light of what we've shared in this past hour. My father is 85 this year, and I'm 56, and so he's lived certainly quite a few number of years more than I. And I'm frustrated at the way life is, the way things are. But what that tells me is that I'm dissatisfied with the game I'm playing, so I need to figure out how to change the game, change to a different game. And you've given us the tools, I think, that if, and this goes back to what you said before, and if we would just use the tools. It's not enough to have a toolbox filled with tools. If you don't use them, what good are the tools?
Yep.
Yeah. How do people get in touch with you, and how do they find out more about and get a hold of these and Angels Light energy tools?
Well, they can write to me to my email. I don't live in a glass house.
Okay.
Write to richardalondon@gmail.com. That's richardalondon@gmail.com. You can ask me questions, or request information about. And what was really interesting, I renamed all the tools yesterday. I was divinely guided. It was like unbelievably beautiful. And I'll share with your listeners before we go, because it's something important. Mm-hmm. There are seven faces of intention: divine love, beauty, expansion of your heart, abundance, peacefulness, kindness, and divine creativity. These are the seven faces of intention. It's like having seven foundations. So imagine your house having seven foundations, how strong it would be. So I was guided yesterday to change the names of seven of the energy tools to the names of the seven faces of intention. So now, in addition to having all the power of all the angels, archangels, ascended masters, light beings of the beings of the seventh ray, like Jesus, Mary, Mary Magdalene, all of these energy pieces, you now have the seven faces of intention in these energy tools. And I can feel the power, because as I was creating the name changes, I had the various pieces in my hand. And so I could feel the difference. Now, listeners out there, these are handmade metal energy pieces. These are works of art. If you were to go to a museum and see these, you go, oh my God, it looks like somebody made them probably in Italy or someplace in Europe 500 years ago. That's how I designed them. Because in this lifetime, I've never really been a fan of modern or minimalistic. It seemed too sterile to me. But I loved history. So you look and you touch these pieces, it's like you're part of history. They're really, really unique in that manner. So they're works of art that have beauty, that have power, and they protect and stop negative energy. And also, collectively, the energy, it moves you forward. And now, with the energy of the seven faces of intention, it even moves it more forward. So, if someone is sitting with an energy piece, say, the pyramid, and they have it sitting on their desk, and they're holding it, and they go, my intention is this, this, this. The power and all the energy tools rearranges itself to create that intention, because you now have the seven phases of intention and that energy piece which sits on your desk. I have the pyramid, the large pyramid. It sits on my desk. Yes.
Now, is there a particular way, position, place, etc., or is it as effective if you were, let's just say, for example, if you were to carry it around with you, if it was, I guess, small enough to be able to do that, or would you put it in this case, it sounds to me like it's like in a picture frame on your desk or up on your wall. How would you physically utilize these tools?
There are some of the tools you can actually put in your backpack or in your purse. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You put on walls, others you can hang from fixtures because they're pendulums. And I can give your listeners a better example. My own dentist, he heard that I was offering the tools. So he said, bring the tools. He was with a client. He left the client, came into his office. I showed him all the tools, and he bought the collection. And then, like a kid, he immediately started putting the collection in various locations in his office. And he didn't ask me where to put it. He just says, it's going to look pretty here or whatever. And all of a sudden, I saw him. He just moved to a new location. I saw more business coming to him. I saw him having more power as a dentist to heal his patients. And it was like the office and the environment, it changed. It was really, really interesting. So I have clients of mine who bought several collections, and they put them in homes around the world. They put them in the dorms of their kids going to college. They put them in their offices, their studios, in their companies, in the various departments, sales departments, and things of that nature. So you can place it wherever you would like. The placement location doesn't really matter. And even if you give a piece away to your child, or you have pieces in various states or countries, it doesn't lose its connection. The connection and power that's in them, they're copper-based tools. so they hold the energy forever. They don't dissipate in energy, nor they can anybody force them to disconnect. So no matter if you're in a brick building, and I have homes that are made out of brick, it doesn't disturb the energy. The energy is always connected because they were connected to work together, and they're going to work together forever. Yeah. So you can put them wherever you would like. I have, like, the violet flame. I have that, the divine love violet flame. I have that on my left side, on my heart side, and I have it on the wall. So I have it's actually a baby's mobile, and it has all the archangels. I have it above me. I have a fixture, and I have it above my desk. So I have various pieces in bedrooms and my living room in front of my door. So the pieces, because of their size and how they're constructed, some people can use them as jewelry as well. So all of them have a place where you can hang them. So there's unlimited possibilities. And I don't know whether or not, you know, when I created them, that was all part of the plan, but it just worked out in that particular way. Because I used to wear lots of these energy pieces. Yes. Because I liked feeling the energy of the various archangels and ascended masters. So I used to wear them. But they weren't designed to be worn, as an example, Richard.
Okay. So you can sort of, in a manner of speaking, sort of modify the way in which you would utilize them, but they will still have that effective power that you've talked about, the energy flow and so forth. And so I encourage people to go to your website, drrichardlondon.com, check out the other information that he has, and see how it can benefit you. I don't think it's going to hurt you. I can't make that guarantee, but I don't think you're going to have any problems in that regard. Dr. Richard London, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing this hour with us. Before I let you go, first of all, if you do find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to talk further about this, because this is, to me, this is just fascinating stuff. And again, we can use all the help that we can get.
I think, you know, we've talked about a lot of important stuff. So remember, listeners, be your own genie in life. Yes, it's really, really important. You know, I created a genie that has a male body and a female body. If you remember, all the genies that we've ever seen, they were always male.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
interesting. And I thought about it years ago, and I said, okay, if I'm going to have a genie, I want my genie to have both male and female energy. So I created a genie that it's part male, part female, with one heart. How do you like that?
Very interesting. Before we let you go, I have three final questions for you that 2.5 years ago, I don't think I asked these questions, so I will pose them to you now. And they are, first of all, who is Dr. Richard London?
Dr. Richard London is a human being here on Earth that is dedicated to making the world a better place with using his empirical faith and to be the best role model that I can be here on Earth. See, the secret weapon in life is being a great role model. People like Richard Branson, he's a really great role model. You're a great role model, and there are great role models. But in the world today, we need more. If you take any third world country and you create 10 role models and 100, then 1,000, 10,000, a million, the country is going to change. Yes. So that's who I really am. I'm always working every second and every minute to be the best that I can, to be the best role model that I can here on Earth. Yeah.
Second question, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, in all honesty to you, I've lived every dream that I could ever imagine. So I'm like work in progress. I'm continuing to do what I call the divine work of God every single day. So nothing has really changed. I'm doing the same thing that I started doing when I was 4 years old. I'm doing 50-some years later. Yeah.
Mm. And finally, and you may have answered this question even throughout this program, but I'll ask it directly. What is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to share wisdom with humanity and to teach humanity that our whole existence is really about the language that is in our mind, in our heart, and in our soul. So I have a motto, great language, great life. So it's really, really to move people into a great language so they could have a great life.
Yeah, we're seeking those new ways of living so that we can thrive and not just survive. And it sounds to me like our species of man is, as you say, is at the tail end of a form of existence. But again, becoming aware of what we have always been. And I want to thank you for sharing all of this with us here on the program, and we do look forward to having you back again in the near future to continue this conversation, whether in studio or on Skype.
Richard, it's been really, sincerely, from the deepest part of my soul and heart, it's been a joy. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. Once again, it's drrichardlondon.com. Find out about all that he's working on and the things that are available to you to help you in your life so that you can have a life that is full and abundant and filled with wellness and wealth and all of the good things that that we all aspire to. Until next time here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, we are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.